Before we begin the next chapter, I just want to thank you for all the amazing reviews you've written. They really warm my heart, give me the confidence I need, and help this show find new listeners. So thank you so much. And also thank you to all of my patrons. This show is commercial-free and will remain that way, but you can support my creative process by becoming a patron. Visit sonofelpodcast.com/support. It's only a little bit each month, but it makes a big difference, especially in helping me believe in myself. I love telling this story and appreciate you enabling me to keep telling it. So thank you, and enjoy the show. You're listening to Book 2 of Superman, Son of El. He is more than a story. He is more than a comic book superhero. He is more than a symbol of hope. He represents our greatest aspirations. He is everything we think we can be. And yet, even with all the strength and all the power in all of the world, he may not be able to meet his greatest challenges and redeem his family's legacy. For he is the Son of El. Chapter 4, Trendsetter. The treaty Clark signed with Wonder Woman had solved the immediate climate crisis, yet required he no longer interfere with the weather. When he wasn't writing his column or enjoying the company of Lana and Martha, his time around the farm felt idle in comparison. The newfound free time only made more space for Clark's apprehensions to take hold. In the days leading to Kara's move to Metropolis, Clark did his best to not let his worries show. He feared his cousin would be unable to hide her powers and that she would draw Luther's ire as a result. Casually, as they all ate dinner on the back porch, he tried to subtly deter Kara from taking on the life of a superhero.
"I can't tell you how lucky you are. When I was your age, I used this opportunity to work hard and prove myself as a reporter, you know? It was hard to resist, but I did it all without using my powers."
Kara cocked her head back, lowering one brow as she scrutinized Clark in disbelief.
"You didn't use any powers?"
"Well, I may have let myself type quickly, and I may have used some of my super observation skills, but nothing anyone would see."
Kara coughed on her bite of food.
"I'm sorry, but did you just say you're super observational?"
Clark didn't answer the question. Instead, he changed the subject to his favorite haunts in Metropolis. He hoped she would take interest in anything else besides becoming a superhero. To his dismay, only weeks after her arrival at the Daily Planet, the newspaper ran an article with the headline, "Is there a new Superman in town?" A red-caped hero had been sighted around the city, brandishing on their chest an S inside a shield. This hero was breaking up small crimes and gang activity. Reading on, Clark's panic was assuaged to learn the hero was a man in a suit of metal, wielding a giant hammer. This news was a relief, though Clark's sense of guilt persisted. Seeing his family's crest cast in metal on this man's chest, Clark wondered if he was somehow responsible. He had influenced this behavior. In subsequent articles that month, Clark learned more about this hero, who was soon dubbed the Man of Steel, or simply, Steel, for short. In an interview, Steel told the Daily Planet how he had noticed that after Superman retired, the people of Metropolis had lost some of their spirit. He went on to explain,
"I figured I had the technology to make a difference. All I needed was a symbol. I wear this cape on my back and the shield on my chest to remind people of what a hero looks like."
Reading this, Clark wasn't so sure how he felt about his role modeling. He was proud to have inspired such sentiment, yet anxious that it might lead to more people being hurt. Clark kept asking himself if he should be doing something to help. When he was invited to Metropolis to receive an award for his best-selling book, he decided to use this time to find the city's new Man of Steel and pay him a visit. The award ceremony was held close to the Daily Planet, prompting Clark to pay his friends a visit directly afterward. Jimmy sprung at a chance to catch up with Clark.
"Ah, Clark, you have no idea. Your cousin and Lois. The two of them are like kids in a clubhouse."
"How do you mean?"
"They're always gossiping in Lois's office. I don't remember our internships being so chummy with the editor-in-chief, you know?"
"Lois offered her the job, so I guess she wanted a personal assistant."
Okay, but why is the door always closed? It bothers me. We can't just walk in and be in on the conversation.
I don't know. I'm not the one to ask. They've been pen pals for years, and I had no idea it was happening.
Sure enough, when Clark went looking for Lois in her office, he found the door closed as she and Kara chatted. The two of them welcomed him in, but it was clear they had changed the subject when he entered. Lois complimented Clark's award in her usual fashion.
I see you brought your plaque. Did you come by to gloat in front of everyone?
No, of course not. I was just hoping you could hold on to it for me for a while I attended some business.
This perked Kara's attention.
What business have you got? Is it Superman business?
Not really, just looking to meet up with someone.
Lois knew exactly what this meant.
Not really? That means Superman is meeting up with someone.
Kara jumped in on this line of thinking.
Totally, no doubt. He's probably going to talk to Steel.
Lois shot a look at Clark, eyes narrowing.
You know who Steel is?
Not yet. Look, can I leave this plaque with you?
Lois got up and walked around her desk, taking the plaque from Clark and admiring her reflection on its surface.
Don't even worry about it. Go run your errands. You can let us ladies take care of everything else. We've got this.
Lois and Kara looked at each other and giggled. Clark was unsure where the punchline was that prompted their laughter, yet he was swiftly ushered out the door without figuring out the joke. Being relieved of carrying the large plaque, he saw his way up to the roof where he transformed into Superman and flew high above Metropolis to watch the city from above. Within the hour, he saw the blazing of blue rockets twisting between the buildings down below. Clark was tempted to join Steel in the rescue efforts of a burning building, yet he didn't feel it was appropriate for him to take any action in Metropolis, especially in light of Steel's effective display of controlling the fire and minimizing casualties. When the metal-clad hero was no longer needed, he returned to his base of operations. Clark seized this moment to introduce himself just outside of Steel's laboratory roof entrance. The hero invited Superman inside.
I knew you'd be coming around here eventually. We better talk inside. There's no reason to make a spectacle of ourselves on my porch. Come on in.
Inside was the workspace of an engineer. Steel walked Superman over to a small lounge in the large room's corner, composed of couches, a table, and a kitchenette. Being offered a seat, Clark casually slung his cape over the back of the couch and sat down as Steel began to remove his own armor, starting with his mask. The man had facial characteristics that were not too different than the metal mask he wore. He was a tall, dark-skinned man with high cheekbones and a warm, genuine smile.
Let me start off by saying, I hope I haven't offended you in any way.
Clark was a bit surprised by this frank expression of humility.
No, not at all. If anything, I'm flattered.
Steel's suit opened up, allowing the man inside to step out.
Well, now you're the one flattering me. But let me introduce myself. My name's Irons. John Henry Irons. It's an honor to meet you, Superman. What can I do for you?
Superman introduced himself as Kal-El and went on to explain his concerns the best he could.
So you see, Mr. Irons, as much as I'm flattered, I'm a bit worried Lex Luthor might make a target out of you.
John Henry sat alongside Superman on the couch, listening to his story. Casually, he put a hand on Superman's shoulder, assuring him.
Don't you worry about that, Superman. LexCorp's already reached out. I turned down their sponsorship. I'm proud of all I've accomplished without them, and I'm not ready to change that. But they didn't seem to mind. They said they wanted to endorse me anyway. We're gonna have a ceremony pretty soon. Luthor himself wants to christen some fountain in my name or something.
Superman's facial expression failed to hide any of his disbelief. John Henry responded accordingly.
My understanding is he wants to promote human ingenuity over alien oppression or some kind of nonsense. But I figured if it would help me get my message out, then I'm willing to play along.
Superman leaned forward, raising a single curious brow.
What message is that? Why, hope, of course. Ever since you left, people have started to lose a little of that spark you gave them. I do what I do to remind them it doesn't have to be gone. We can instill hope in each other.
Superman leaned back and smiled. Through the noise of all his worries, the confidence of John Henry's voice won out. Clark put his fears aside and decided to trust this man's vision. Perhaps Superman could step aside, and his memory would be enough to inspire the world. John Henry went on, seeking approval.
I hope you don't mind me wearing your cape and shield. I realize it was a bit presumptuous of me to start dressing like this, but I figured you'd understand. Oh, of course, I get it. I just don't want to lead you into something without reaching out and giving you a little heads up of what kind of attention you're asking for. Well, I appreciate it, Superman. Having you sign off on all this was always my intent. I guess I just chose to ask you for forgiveness instead of permission.
Clark smiled, meeting John Henry's eyes.
Well, I give you both. You're forgiven, and you have my permission. I'll even give you a little advice. You might want to do away with the cape. They can be cumbersome in action.
John Henry puzzled his brow in reflection.
Yeah, it can tend to do that. I figure I'll work it out eventually. Most heroes with capes seem to get the hang of it.
Clark scratched his head while he pondered.
Yeah, well, my cape isn't really any normal fabric. Same for Martian Manhunter and Batman. You're free to keep wearing it, but be careful. Maybe talk to Ray Palmer about any alternatives you might have.
Don't even stress about it. The cape's attached with magnets. It detaches before it gives me any trouble. But I appreciate your concern. Your cousin said the same thing.
Superman was beginning to stand as they spoke. This news brought him to full attention.
You've met Aquaman? When was that?
No, your other cousin, Supergirl.
Supergirl?
Clark's jaw dropped, though John Henry hadn't noticed as he rose to his feet.
Yeah, I helped her take down a terrorist a couple weeks back. Some war vet on a rampage. Sweet girl. Got her heart in the right place. Say hi to her for me.
Superman did his best to compose himself.
Yeah, I'll be sure to do that.
After his meeting with Steel, Clark flew directly back to the Daily Planet. Kara had already left, but he found Lois hanging his plaque alongside a very awkward portrait that Jimmy had taken of Clark at his desk years ago. Clark thought it a bit tad presumptuous that she claimed the plaque.
You know, I was just leaving that with you for safekeeping.
Lois stepped back from leveling the portrait.
Yeah, I know. But you didn't say how long you were leaving it for, so I thought I would hang it in a safe place.
Clark examined Lois from over his glasses.
Is there anything in particular you want to share with me? In private? In your office?
Nothing that I imagine you haven't pieced together already. And besides, I'm sure Kara will tell you when she thinks it's appropriate.
Lois was tight-lipped and said no more, and Kara didn't return to the office before Clark left. Saying goodbye, he wondered what he would tell Martha when he returned without a new trophy for her collection. Instead of heading straight home, he decided to visit Gotham while he was on the East Coast. Inside the Batcave, he found Batman working at his computer console. Batman turned to greet Superman with a smile. Yet Clark was surprised to be greeted by the voice of Richard Grayson.
Hey, Superman. What brings you to Gotham?
Oh, I was in the area, hoping to talk to Bruce.
The big guy is... It's complicated. He put me in charge while he sorts it out. But what can I do for you?
Oh, nothing in particular. Thanks, though.
I hope you're not disappointed. I know I'm not the real deal you're expecting, but this isn't my first time to wear the cowl. What do you need?
Clark frowned.
I guess I just wanted to know Bruce was all right.
Richard's eyes moistened a little, reflecting back Clark's worries.
No, he's not all right.
What's going on, Rich?
The young man looked down at the floor before meeting Clark's gaze.
He thinks Jason's alive. He's gone off looking for him.
This news sent chills down Clark's spine. Jason Todd had died years ago at the hand of the Joker.
He what? How? Why?
Like I said, it's complicated. He's gone to confront Ra's al Ghul.
Clark's eyes widened in horror as he uttered a whisper.
The Lazarus Pits.
Yeah, that's the idea. But I still have my doubts.
Bruce usually doesn't miscalculate.
Richard paused to stare at Superman before answering with a flat, "You'd be surprised." There was little else he felt like saying on the subject. They chatted for a few minutes more about life and various trivial matters. Before leaving, Clark looked at Richard, seeing how much this all wore on him. Superman opened up his arms, asking,
Do you need a hug before I go?
The young man wearing the cape and cowl of Batman paused, unsure, staring at Superman. In a small voice, he answered,
"Yeah, actually, I really do."
After giving his friend an encouraging embrace, Clark flew back to the farm for supper. Walking into the kitchen, he found his cousin was already there. Martha was fixing dinner while listening to Kara tell a harrowing story of office intern hijinks. When Clark sat at the table with her, she abandoned her tale, instead turning to him with wide eyes.
"Any luck finding Steele?"
"Oh yeah, I found him no problem. He told me to say hello."
Kara's eyes darted to Clark, though she tried to play it off as though it were nothing.
"Oh, yeah, about that? That was a funny thing."
"He said something about a war veteran turned terrorist that he helped you with?"
Judging by Martha's complete lack of reaction, it dawned on Clark that this wasn't news to her. Kara attempted to explain it to him.
"I swear I was only trying to prove myself as a reporter. You know, like you told me to. I was writing this story about this disgruntled war vet, Ben Krolin. He was making a lot of noise in front of City Hall every day, and no one seemed to care. I had no idea the day I approached him for an interview would be the day he would come to City Hall, armed to the teeth with a dozen guns and a grenade launcher and whatever else he was carrying."
Martha pulled dinner out of the oven, unfazed, while Clark looked at them both in astonishment.
"How did I not hear about this?"
Kara puzzled her face to think about it.
"Well, I think it was because Steele showed up and I just let it appear to be his victory. I really wasn't ready to come out as Supergirl yet."
Clark gave his cousin a sharp glance.
"Yet? You mean you've been planning on it?"
Kara rolled her eyes.
"Well, yeah, duh."
Clark turned to Martha as she served dinner to the table as casual as could be.
"You knew about this?"
"Oh, sure, but let's not worry about it now. It was weeks ago, and dinner's ready."
Before Clark could pursue the matter further, Lana came in to join them for supper.
"Hi, Clark. How'd your award ceremony go?"
Clark didn't get far into answering before Kara excused herself to fly back to Metropolis. She had a date that night to attend to and didn't care to hear Clark repeat himself, especially if it would only lead back to him confronting her. She wasn't wrong. Clark had been hoping for another chance to bring it up, but he never got the opportunity. When his cousin left, he turned to Lana. The two of them had been discussing the barn's renovation that morning and were eager to get back to it. With Clark's powers and Jonathan's old tools, the actual work would be quick and relatively easy. The hardest part was finalizing the floor plan. All that week, as they envisioned their home in the upper level of the barn, Kara joined them in the evenings to enjoy Martha's cooking for dinner. With each visit, she was less evasive about her activities as Supergirl. By the week's end, as Clark began construction, she was brazenly telling them all about her heroics over the dinner table. All the while, the Daily Planet was covering her every escapade. It happened overnight, as though her debut were only waiting on his reaction. Kara's visit soon dropped to once a week or so, but her stories only became more extravagant. When she started making appearances as Supergirl, she was only attending to small-scale disasters, much like Steel had. But as her reputation grew, she found herself dealing with a new class of villains. Members of the vague yet nefarious organization known as the Legions of Doom had become her constant nuisance.
"How do you deal with it, Clark? They are the worst. The Toy Man? How do I stop a maniac using an army of toys when he isn't even around to be stopped?"
"Did Winslow break out of prison again?"
"Oh, yeah. He made some animatronic model of himself. It paced in his cell for days before anyone even noticed the difference."
"Have you tried following his remote signal?"
Kara tilted her head down into the side, looking at Clark from under her unimpressed brow.
"Well, obviously I did. Do you know how many times I've heard that story?"
Martha relished in telling about the time Clark tracked down the Toy Man in his lair. Kara insisted that her challenges weren't the same as his.
"He's hacking into satellites to control his drones, and he's sending them out on two simultaneous attacks. And they both end up being some elaborate distraction for another crime happening somewhere else. You have no idea."
"I kind of do, actually. Have you reached out to the Justice League? I can introduce you."
"I didn't have to. They already reached out to me. But I've been super busy, so I don't know what I'm supposed to do next."
"Who did you talk to?"
"The Martian man, which was weird because as far as I knew, I thought all the Martians were dead."
Clark imagined how awkward it already was for John Jones to approach Kara, being that she was from the Kryptonian old world. Considering John's inhibitions towards Krypton, Clark could understand how their meeting might not have gone so well. He offered to help mitigate.
Do you want me to contact them for you? I can reach out to John Jones right now. I can even teach you how to do it yourself if you want.
Kara declined Clark's offer and accomplished the task on her own in the following days. Joining the Justice League had made her busier than ever, and for a few months, the most Kent Farm heard of her adventures was through the Daily Planet. Besides the articles of her own heroics, the newspaper had started a column, Supergirl Fashion Week, devoted to Supergirl's ever-changing costume. Though always clad in red and blue and blazoned with her family's crest, she was known to rarely wear the same outfit twice and had become something of a fashion icon. As her fame boomed, Clark and Lana settled into their new home in the upper level of the barn. In bed one evening, Clark opened up about his doubts.
I feel like there's something I'm supposed to be doing, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is.
You've been doing just fine, if you ask me.
Well, I appreciate your vote of confidence, but I still need to figure out what to do with myself.
What's bothering you, Clark? Really? What's behind all this?
Clark stared at his feet at the end of the bed.
I guess I'm worried about Kara. She's getting into something I eventually decided to step away from. But I wonder if that was a mistake. Should I be stepping in again so she doesn't have to?
Lana turned to Clark, propping her head up on one arm.
Are you thinking she won't be able to handle herself?
No. Well, maybe. I still think I did the right thing by walking away. I just don't want it all to happen all over again.
Lana took Clark's hand and squeezed it.
We've both wondered if the world could get by without Superman. Now we don't have to. I think Supergirl will take care of things just fine. You don't have to focus on all this if you don't want to.
Clark rolled over to face Lana. But what should I do instead?
I don't think this is something anyone can decide for you, Clark. But I do know, if you see something that needs doing, and no one else is working at doing it, you ought to try and see what you can do about it.
Clark lay back again, staring at the rafters in the ceiling. Lana was right. There was no point in fretting over Kara's fate. It wasn't his life to live. Worrying about his cousin was distracting him from his own priorities. He was still unsure what those priorities were as he drifted off to sleep. In his last thought before slumber, he remembered it was time to plant a new crop. Over breakfast the next morning, Clark, Lana, and Martha discussed the future of Kent Farm. The conversation began as it had every planting season. Yet Clark found himself dwelling on his meeting with Diana. The treaty they had signed together allowed for some immediate relief in the climate crisis, but the problem had not gone away. It was only a temporary solution as Luther's great carbon sink continued to off-gas. Clark's perspective was simple.
I don't know how much we can do with our little farm, but I feel like it's got to be more than just planting wheat and oats.
With Clark's book sales and weekly column supporting the family, Martha let him do some experimenting with the land. He began studying permaculture, and though it wasn't pretty in the beginning, Clark gathered an array of organic matter to decompose all over the property. Heaps of kitchen and yard debris strewn about were not what Martha thought she had agreed to. The smell of the decomposing waste was nearly too much to bear. Yet Clark was constantly adding worms and amendments to the waste, layering it all to neutralize the odor and rid them of the nuisance of flies. By the time the harvest ball had come around, wild plants had volunteered their seeds, sprouting from the rolling hills Clark had mounded. Kara had been so busy as Supergirl, she had missed all of the transformation, except for a brief visit when the smell was at its worst. As she joined Clark and Lana in setting up the ball that year, Kara couldn't stop exclaiming her disbelief in how much Clark had done with the farm, though she wasn't sure why he had done it.
I get that it looks cool, but I don't get it. Why are you growing dandelions and a bunch of weeds instead of anything useful?
Clark attempted to impart his strategy.
These plants are useful, and I'm only just starting. Also, they're not all weeds. I've selected which ones to keep and where to keep them. But this is just phase one.
They discussed a little of what Clark was learning while setting up Lana's decoration concepts. The people of Smallville were beginning to count on the Harvest Ball to be the most extravagant night of the year. In anticipation,
many people, including Mrs. Siegel, wore colorful attire with large hats and some light masquerading. In the year since the last Harvest Ball, Lana and Clark had practiced their dance moves. Throughout the night, they shared in several songs on the dance floor. Afterward, when the party was over, only Clark and Kara remained. As they took down the decorations, Kara stopped and turned to her cousin for advice.
Hey, Clark, do you ever feel bad for the people?
Clark kept winding up the garlands that hung from the ceiling.
Which people?
Kara looked around the room in introspection.
The human people. They're kind of pathetic sometimes.
Clark stopped what he was doing to talk to Kara, leaning against the table she stood at.
Did you not have a good time at the party?
Kara kept her eyes moving, averting them from Clark.
No, nothing like that. It's the people I'm dealing with back in Metropolis.
Clark feared the worst.
Luther?
What? No. Luther's annoying, but I just ignore him.
You what?
You'd be surprised how well it works.
Clark scratched his head.
If it isn't Luther, what's your problem?
Kara finally looked directly at Clark.
Do you remember that war vet? Ben Krollin? The one I stopped with Steel?
Yeah, what about him?
He didn't stay in prison long. Just went in and out of some asylum. But he came back and he was really upset at me. As if I'd somehow ruined his life. The guy's totally insane and he shows up wearing all this crazy mechanical gear. And guns. And flamethrowers. And he's only there for me. And I just felt so bad for the guy.
As she continued, her eyes again looked away, this time looking at her clasped hands.
But he was shooting in every direction, so I kind of forgot to hold back when I hit him, and I felt a lot worse after I hit him. He survived, but it was just sad.
I'm so sorry, Kara. That sounds horrible.
She peered back up at Clark.
How do you do it? How do you not cry yourself to sleep every night?
Clark put his hand on her shoulder.
I can't say there wasn't a time when I didn't do just that. It's not an easy role to play.
Kara leaned her head on Clark, and he held her in a great big hug. She sighed.
Yeah, I can see why you spend all your time gardening.
Clark found himself set at ease by these words. While consoling Kara, he found himself equally reassured by his cousin. Gardening did feel like the right thing to do.
Thank you for listening. I'm Isaac Bluefoot. Book 2 of Son of El was written and independently produced by myself. This story means so much to me and I love sharing it. Doing so has become a compulsion. I sincerely believe the more people that hear it, the better. I really appreciate you sharing the story, and thank you to everyone who's written a review. It really helps more listeners find the show. I'm especially grateful to my patrons. It's only a couple bucks a month, but altogether it helps me pay for some of the bills on this production. You can become a patron by visiting sonofelpodcast.com/support. I really appreciate it. This story was inspired by the Superman and DC comics and characters originally created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, with additional contributions by William Moulton Marston, Harry G. Peter, Bill Finger, John Sakella, Otto Binder, Al Plastino, Louise Simonson, John Bogdanov, Bob Kane, Joseph Samichson, Joe Serta, Jerry Conway, Don Newton, Jerry Robinson, Dennis O'Neill, Neil Adams, Julius Schwartz, Paul Cooperberg, Carmine Infantino, Don Cameron, and Ed Dobrotka. Music in this episode was made by Chad Crouch, Blue Dot Sessions, Mystery Mammal, Siddhartha Corsis, Poddington Bear, Aldous Ignite, Mellow C, Anatech, and Kirk Osamayo. See the episode notes for details. And be sure to listen to the next episode. Chapter 5. Many Proposals.